Blog Talk Radio.
Peace. I'm called Professor X, the Overseer. In the early 1900s, a brother set out on voyage. His mission, black nationalism. His oath, freedom or death. In the 60s, brothers like Stokely Carmichael, H. Rap Brown, the mission, black nationalism. The oath, freedom or death. In the 90s, the mission, black nationalism. The messengers, X-Clan. The movement, Black Watch. The oath, freedom or death. By the way,
freedom or death, you shall all be moved. Vanglory, this is protected by the red, the black, and the green, with the key city.
Abracadabra, a la baby professor, all hail funky lesson, sweet tongue grand writer of scrolls. Now behold, let the legend unfold. Born in a cosmos where no time and space do exist, vibe in the midst of the chaos. Mortals label me as a logical, mythological. They couldn't comprehend when I brought the word, a thick called verb, a black steel nerve, teaching those actors and actresses who write a couple lines on what black is. Really? Then they label me a sin when a brother just speaks what's within. I guess I'm blacker than the shadow in the darkest alley that they're always scared to go in. Boo! I wear boots and beads, bags and braids, stick and scroll, rings and shades. Walk in the light of the moon, but I've never been a Batman. African, call it black man. Brother, expect the African steps in your movement. Enhance for improvement. Grand funk, a new home for the phrase. Funk and lesson, the pathway.
Ready or not, yeah.
And cornbread, how can you act this? I exist on a plane with a jar as my brain. I'm living to retrieve cells and ten on my stick. Picture bigger, native liquor figure. The foam of the trigger goes boom, not boom. Not a bunch of sissies, but saviors braver. The red, black, and green is just so much more than red, black, and green. You ask what I mean, but yet the sun down shades and lights a dream. Watch too late, oops, upside your head. You drop through a bit like lead. Where you going? What's your speed? What's your pleasure? What's your need? Trees and branches, roots and seeds. Forward, backward, many degrees. Questions, answers, what's the sum? We have come.
Out of the darkness in panther skin comes doctors, driving pink caddies, bearing the remedy to your existence. Yes, it gets blacker with a Nat Turner lick. Martin, Adam, Malcolm, Huey, there's a party at the crossroads.
Down.
I'm an artist, respect to the goddess. Some say I'm too modest because I'm the hardest. On this path to progress, there's incarnate. Regardless, this is a harvest for the world to harness. Elders dream, creators promise. Being free is like paying homage. I've been on that beast, Black Dalai Lama. My college was between Stony and Cottage. The knowledge, I got it because niggas was valid. Knew I had to pull it, the bullet or the ballot. It's like the parable of the story of the talents. When my people took it paper with no margin, turning ghettos to gardens like Ron Finley. Through stages of life, the world's my Wembley. I MC from the point of entry of peace. Some find it don't do the paper routing, and some find they peace through praise and shouting, and some find they peace through pulling the shades like Malcolm. I found my peace making these albums. Peace. Ground zero for xenophobia. They love to trope me, a misquote me. They even wrote me out of all accounts, other than show them a small amount. Till I called them out, I'm what the story is all about. My arrival wasn't willingly, nah, but that's chillingly the truth. Now I'm feared for shot from cops killing me. They on a hunt for the plug, and we the auxiliary. The black power and love, I'm all the above. We'll find peace in the culture, I'm responsible to saving every piece of the puzzle, every article, the page. I'm at peace in the struggle, I'm awake and not afraid. While I'm channeling my energy from particle to wave at peace, like Mandela seated on Robben Island. Wise like a prophet arriving from the Highlands. Look, I'm not here for any kind of problem. Keep me out of your gossip column. Thank you, I'm calm and tranquil. At the time and place you I shine. Word to God, I'm divine and graceful. The grind could break you. If you concentrate, you can find your faith with a higher conscience. Take you that peace.
Must be a better way.
Get up.
arrogant prince who saw me off from Atlanta. I plan to return to Atlanta, Georgia very soon. I have some, I laid the foundation for our transfer of the Central Committee, Central Headquarters to Georgia. And I said that was the scene of the original crime, the South. It was in North Carolina, Jamestown in 1916, rather. But approximately 9 slaves arrived there, chained. And this is where the original crime began, slavery. And I think the South then will be the logical focal point to correct the original crime. They say that criminals always return to the scene. And I say in order to correct the original crime, that we must return to the scene.
Isn't that an action were you getting from Atlanta after you made that?
Beautiful. Very beautiful reaction. The people, the victims, the obvious victims. You know, the victim is always a stair step. We have the victim on top of the victim on top of the victim until we reach some threshold we call the oppressor. And in this very complex social order, we find that it's very difficult to pinpoint him. You see? So what we try to do is to improve the conditions of mankind. We find that man's ignorance is really the oppressor. And this is whether it's racism, whether it's class oppression, it's really racism because each thing cuts its own throat. You advocate racism or class oppression, you end up being a victim yourself because the people will correct that and you might be hurt in the process.
But it's a little tougher to make it in Atlanta down there. How about the next trial?
I'm very optimistic about everything. I think the man will survive. As far as my individual life, that all of us, including yourself, are doomed to death. But the real enemy is that phenomena that we know nothing about, and that is death that we fight against. That we fight against it with medicine, we fight against it with knowledge, we fight against racism also like that. And this is the thing that we're fighting against. We're fighting against racism, we're fighting against oppression of all kinds, and we're fighting against ignorance. And people who boo, people who fail to understand the problems of humanity, are really very religious because their God is large, meaning their ignorance is large, you see?
Yeah, but my
in other words, that God is not, which they do not understand. As soon as they understand it, suddenly it's not God. And I say, gain your understanding, then you understand yourself, and you also understand me, and that is that we all want to live. Chinese people are very humane and friendly people. They attempt to understand all ignorance and backwardness. I would suspect and anticipate that Richard Nixon will receive a warm welcome, but that has no indication of what the results of the talks might be. The talks might be successful, or they might fail, but it will depend upon the attitude and the kind of language that Richard Nixon will use. Certainly, he cannot be trigger happy as he was in Attica because the Chinese people are strong people, and their land is very fertile. We know that the ruling circle in this country will only take advantage of victims, such as the prisoners at Attica, the guards at Attica, and the Vietnamese.
In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, to whom all praise is due, whom we forever thank for giving us the Honorable Elijah Muhammad as our leader, teacher, and guide. And I specifically, ladies and gentlemen, and brothers and sisters, open up like that because I am a representative of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. And were it not for him, you and I wouldn't be here today. In order for you and me to devise some kind of method or strategy to offset some of the events or a repetition of the events that have taken place here in Los Angeles recently, we have to go to the root. We have to go to the cause. Dealing with the condition itself is not enough. We have to get to the cause of it all, or the root of it all. And it is because of our effort toward getting straight to the root that people oftentimes think we are dealing in hate. But first, I would like to congratulate and give praise to the Negro, so-called Negro leaders and so-called Negro organizations. And excuse me if I say so-called, it's hard for me to just outright say Negro when I know what that word Negro really means. The person whom you have come to know as Ronald Stokes, we know him as Brother Ronald, one of the most religious persons who displayed the highest form of morals of any black person anywhere on this earth. And as one of the previous speakers pointed out who knew him, everyone who knew him had to give him credit for being a good man, a clean man, an intelligent man, and an innocent man when he was murdered. The Negro, so-called Negro organizations and leaders should be given great credit for their failure or refusal to let the white man divide them and use them one against the other during this crisis. As Reverend Welford Wilson pointed out, I think it was 8 years ago today that the Supreme Court handed down the desegregation decision. And despite the fact that 8 years have gone past, that decision hasn't been implemented yet. I don't have that much faith. I don't have that much confidence. I don't have that much patience. And I don't have that much ignorance if the Supreme Court, which is the highest law-making body in the country, can pass a decision that can't get even 8% compliance with in 8 years, because it's for black people, then my patience has run out. When black people who are being oppressed become impatient, they say that's emotional. Please. When black people who are being deprived of their citizenship, not only of their civil rights, but their human rights, become impatient, become fed up, don't want to wait any longer, then they say that's emotional. The Negro, so-called Negro leaders and organizations should be praised. They should be congratulated. They should be complimented. Because out of all of them combined, the white man has not yet found one who will play the role of Uncle Tom. But yet he has found no Tom, no puppet, no parrot who is still dumb enough in 1962 to represent the injustices that he's afflicting against our people. We don't care what your religion is. We don't care what organization you belong to. We don't care how far in school you went or didn't go. We don't care what kind of job you have. We have to give you credit for shocking the white man by not letting him divide you and use you one against the other. In the past, the greatest weapon the white man has had has been his ability to divide and conquer. As Jackie Robinson pointed out beautifully on the
television last night, 4/5 of the world isn't white. Isn't that what Jackie said? And if 4/5 of the world is dark, how is it possible for 1/5 to rule, oppress, exploit, dominate, and brutalize the 4/5 who are in the majority?
How do they do it?
Divide and conquer. If I take my hand and slap you, you don't even feel it. It might sting you because these digits are separated. But all I have to do to put you back in your place is bring those digits together. This is what the white man has done to you and me. He has divided us and used us one against the other. But today, thanks to Allah, you can say thanks to God or thanks to Jesus or thanks to Jehovah, whatever you want. But as a follower of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, we have been taught to say thanks to Allah. And that's what Jesus said. Jesus called on Allah. He said, Allah, Allah, lama asabatani. I believe what's good for Jesus is good for you. If Allah was good enough for Jesus to call upon, I think he should be good enough for you to call upon. Since the so-called Negro community has shot the white man by resisting all efforts to divide us, I think that you and I should continue to shock him by staying and working together in unity. Despite religious, political, economic, or educational, or social differences, let us remember that we are not brutalized because we're Baptist. We're not brutalized because we're Methodist. We're not brutalized because we're Muslim. We're not brutalized because we're Catholic. We're brutalized because we are black people in America. Hey, your mother is being raped and you're not supposed to be emotional. Your women, please, your women can't walk the street without some cracker putting his hands on her, and you're not supposed to be emotional. If you say that you're fed up, if you teach the Negro, people don't even know their own name. Why? Because he took it away from them. Please, please. 20 million black people don't even know their own language. Why? Because he took it away from them. 20 million black people who don't even know the history of their ancestors. Why? Because he took it away from them. And if you try and tell them how thoroughly and completely they've been robbed, he says you're teaching hate. That's something to think about. Today, you are coming out of college. You're coming out of the leading universities. You're trying to go in a good direction, but you don't know which direction to go in. And if somebody tries to take you right to the root of your problem, they say that that man's a hate teacher. If I ask why should the senators in Washington, and then again, if we tell you that Negroes are being hung on the tree or being shot down illegally, unjustly, and those Negroes should do something to protect themselves, you say you're advocating violence. The white man is tricking you. He's trapping you. He doesn't call it violence when he lands troops in South Vietnam. Please, please, please. He doesn't call it violence when he lands troops in Berlin. When the Japanese attacked Pearl Harbor, he didn't say get nonviolent. He said, praise the Lord, but pass the ammunition. But when someone attacks you, when someone comes at you with a club, when someone comes at you with a rope, when someone comes at you with a gun, despite the fact that you've done nothing, he tells you, suffer peacefully. Pray for those who use you despitefully. Be long-suffering. And how long can you suffer after suffering for 400 years? So I just want to clear up that little point right there. Because he says that we play on your emotions. And when you turn on your television tonight, or your radio, or read the newspaper, they're going to tell you in that paper that I was playing on your emotions. Imagine you, a second-class citizen. That's not getting emotional, it's getting intelligent. And as far as your mayor is concerned, I see you should say their mayor, a man named Yorty, who has been slandering the Muslims, a professional liar. Who has mastered the art of using half-truths. Put it in the paper that they broke into our religious place of worship and got records that they can use to prove that most of us have criminal records. You can't be a Negro in America and not have a criminal record. Martin Luther King has been to jail. Please. James Farmer has been to jail. Why, you can't name a black man in this country who is sick and tired of the hell that he's catching who hasn't been to jail. Charge him with being seditious. They put Moses in jail. They put Daniel in jail. Why, you haven't got a man of God in the Bible that wasn't put to jail when they started speaking out against exploitation and oppression. They charged Jesus with sedition. Didn't they do that? They said he was against Caesar. They said he was discriminating. Because he told his disciples, go not the way of the Gentiles, but rather go to the lost sheep. He discriminated. Don't go near the Gentiles, go to the lost sheep. Go to the oppressed. Go to the downtrodden. Go to the exploited. Go to the people who don't know who they are, who are lost from the knowledge of themselves, and who are strangers in a land that is not theirs. Go to those people. Go to the slaves. Go to the second-class citizens. Go to the ones who are suffering the brunt of Caesar's brutality. And if Jesus were here in America today, he wouldn't be going to the white man. The white man is the oppressor. He would be going to the oppressed. He would be going to the humble. He would be going to the lowly. He would be going to the rejected and the despised. He would be going to the so-called American Negro. To have once been a criminal is no disgrace. To remain a criminal is the disgrace. I formerly was a criminal. I formerly was in prison. I'm not ashamed of that. You never can use that over my head. And that he's using the wrong stick. I don't feel that stick. I went to prison because I believed in men like Sam Yorty. I went to prison because I trusted men like Sam Yorty. I went to prison following the philosophy of men like Sam Yorty. But since I've been following the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, I have been reformed, and that's more, please. That's more than Sam Yorty and Chief Parker and all these other white politicians have been able to do with the inmates in the prisons of this state. They should give Mr. Muhammad credit. They should give Mr. Muhammad credit for reforming and rehabilitating men whom they have failed to reform and rehabilitate. Mayor Yorty referred to some press report that Mr. Muhammad had once been found guilty of contributing to the delinquency of a minor. He failed to explain purposely that in 1934, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad refused to send his children to the white schools in Detroit, Michigan that were teaching you about little black Sambo. That's the minor that he contributed to the delinquency of. You see, this vicious, fork-tongued white man has been able to take lies and make you turn against those who want to help you and make others turn against you. This is the contributing to the delinquency of a minor that this mayor, or man who calls himself mayor, is talking about. In the same article, he said that the Muslims are the same people who rioted in the United Nations. Someone should pull his coat and let him know that at the present moment, there are $6 million worth of suits leveled against two of New York's leading newspapers for making the mistake of charging the Muslims as being involved in those United Nations riots. We were not involved. And if this fork-tongued man who calls himself your mayor had taken the time to find that out, he wouldn't be walking into the trap that he's letting his ignorance lead him into. And if he would take the time to read the Washington Post that came out the Sunday after that incident took place, the Washington Post pointed out on the front page that the Muslims had nothing to do with the UN riots. And they quoted, in saying so, the person who was at that time the commissioner of police in New York City. See, it's lies that the white man has spread about the Muslims to try and make you afraid of the Muslims, or to try and make you think that the Muslims were a criminal element, an uncouth element, and things that you would not like to be associated with. Also, they say that I'm just clearing these things up, and then we're going to get into what happened. They also say that the Honorable Elijah Muhammad was a draft dodger. No, he wasn't. He just refused to go to the army because he was a man of peace. He was a minister of a religion of peace. He was teaching peace. So he outright refused to go to the army. That's not draft dodging. That's intelligence. Appear before the grand jury. Because the coroner's jury is stacked against Negroes. The grand jury is stacked against Negroes. The press, the radio, the television, and the newspapers are stacked against Negroes. But please, the Los Angeles Police Department is stacked against Negroes. He is stacked against all Negroes, all except those whom he has appointed to high positions. The controlled press, the white press, inflames the white public against Negroes. The police are able to use it to paint the Negro community as a criminal element. The police are able to use the press to make the white public think that 90% or 99% of the Negroes in the Negro community are criminals. And once the white public is convinced that most of the Negro community is a criminal element, then this automatically paves the way for the police to move into the Negro community, exercising Gestapo tactics, stopping any black man who is in on the sidewalk, whether he is guilty or whether he is innocent, whether he is well-dressed or whether he is poorly dressed.
Black power, black power, black nation. You're tuned into In Defense of the People weekly Tuesday night broadcast at 7 p.m. Central, 8 p.m. Eastern with your host, People's Political Party National Chairman Nat Turner, co-host myself, National Minister of Defense Brother Motherland, and our engineers on the ones and twos, National Minister of Communication, Sister Amina, Call in each and every Tuesday night, same black place, same black time at 845-277-9266. Press 1 to participate. Tonight's topic, political prisoners, past and present. We're going to open up our lines to our People's Political Party National Chair, Brother Matt Turner. Black Power, Chairman, can you hear me?
Black Power, brother, right on. All power to the people. So,
Black power to the people.
Doing a show on political prisoners, past and present. We've done a past show in reference to political prisoners. We've done a fundraiser, as a matter of fact, for our little comrade, who we believe and understand and know as a political prisoner at present, who will also be mentioned as part of tonight's PE class, political education session. And we feel as the cog in the wheel, which will move black collective masses of still displaced people of African descent, the descendants of those of our ancestors who were brought from the motherland to this part of the world by the violence of force of violence, and forced into slavery, which was the foundation for the current American capitalist system of robbery, exploitation, poverty, racism, sexism, classism, as they all relate to black people collectively. In the struggle, a revolutionary struggle, or when a group of subjected people who have been subjected to the rule of law under so-called law and order, and of America, the U.S. Capitalist system as we know it. And I don't make any apologies for the constant use of the term capitalism, more than ever, understanding the true nature of this system. This, what we're told is a government. How it operates as a type of function system under which people are supposed to live being subjected to. And it is this system that has driven not only the people in this country into the ground, that has driven people around the world into the ground, and particularly on a larger scale, black and brown people, or non-whites, who represent the majority population of humanity on this earth. And has never been a friend, has never been friendly towards the indigenous black and brown people of desert. Here in America, there's a small, tiny portion of it being subjected to the U.S. government policies, its laws, its mandates, its so-called rules that serve and protect, that is, beginning with the white ruling class, steerers of the state. And again, what we mean by the state, the politician, the businessman, the judge, and the police, to sum it up. And it is that relationship and the concerted effort in a coordinated effort, a cooperative effort to what some of us term the status quo, the hierarchy, the pyramidal structure from the top down. And along the way, there are those who have been put in positions as another group of people, class of people, the so-called middle class, and on down to the lower stratum of society, who are referred to, at least those of us who work what's called legally, and those who, of us who hustle legally, because after all, we're all hustling in this country. That includes the white ruling class. They hustle too. They hustle people, which leads to abject poverty. And so those were the source of labor, the SOL, referred to as the working class, the black working class in this particular case. And below them is the unemployed, those who in European terminologies, if we speak European language or English language, in the revolutionary struggle, understand the revolutionary ideology, putting things in a proper perspective, using terminologies that have been used to identify a group of people, the so-called lumping of the masses. What we know in our language terminology, speaking as a people, what we know, you know, the niggas on the streets, you know, who are hustling, who are outside the so-called legal ramifications of the law. Those of us who hustle illegally, which at one point was illegal on the part of those who now declare it to be illegal, meaning what's being done on the streets declared to be illegal was carried out by the super rich, who managed to, as a matter of fact, get themselves in a privileged position or a position of advantage, and then close ranks and write up laws which now make it illegal for the same things that they had done to get themselves in such a lofty position at the top. And this main hustle in which they had indulged themselves was the dope trade. And we will do a series, as a matter of fact, coming up in the what's known as the dope trade, and give it some context, some structure, some understanding, as opposed to the usual. But these are the same people now who have propped themselves up, and as I said, have been hustling ever since. And so, in this specific case of black people, after 500 years of white terrorism in its various functions, psychological warfare, economic warfare, political warfare, even religious warfare, and of course in a more clandestine, sophisticated way, was referred to as self-inflicted genocide. And so the conditions have led black people collectively to develop some type of attitude coming out of physical slavery on into reconstruction. And if you spell reconstruction, make sure you spell it, the third, fourth, and fifth letters without, in all caps, so you can understand what we really mean when we say reconstruction. And so on into Jim Crow and the so-called civil rights movement, on into the 70s and 80s and whatnot. And of course, during the 60s, this movement was not just about civil rights, but it had been made to be the poster child for the struggle in general. In the midst of that, there was referred to as the Black Liberation Movement. Those who sought to attain the power to wrest the power from the hands of the white ruling class and their middle class white functionaries who had been willing to go along. And of course, there's always the innate relationship, the genetical relationship of oneness in terms of whiteness, whether they're rich whites, middle class whites, or poor whites. And so this has placed black people in a position, our position. And naturally what occurs is a response. And so in this response in a sense became revolutionary. And out of this revolutionary attitude grew certain organizations, formations, particularly the Black Panther Party, founded in, matter of fact, this month, October 15th, 1966, due to the concrete conditions that had been seen in the western part of the country, and particularly Oakland, UEP Newton, and Bobby Seale, the founders of the Black Panther Party. The Black Panther Party had become so formidable due to its being politicized, understanding what the state really is, how conditions arrive, how conditions begin to formulate themselves due to economic disenfranchisement on the part of one group directed at another group who within the geographical boundaries of this country is made to be minority. And so this minority, being subjected to the whims of the so-called majority. And so this is what brought about the rise of the Black Panther Party, and particularly, of course, there were other organizations who had also become a part of the struggle. These ideological things that take place, these the ideological shapings, which see some types of antagonisms or conflict in ideology, or therefore contradictions. The NAACP, the Urban League, Congress of Racial Equality, and so forth, SNCC, which we can say was between the NAACP on one end and the Black Panther Party on the other end in terms of militancy growing towards the revolutionary stage. And so the transformation of these young people into the Black Panther Party and their understanding programs of the Black Panther Party had developed, a number of which have now become part of the American mainstream system when it comes to, let's say, our students, breakfast program and whatnot. And so it is due to the Black Panther Party's ideology from a revolutionary standpoint, having studied and understood the struggles of other oppressed peoples around the world, Vietnam, China, even adding, taking a look at the so-called Russian Revolution. And they understand the level of what is referred to now as Marxism-Leninism, which takes the system of capitalism and places it in such a context where its inherent contradictions will naturally bring about its own demise due to a specific set of goals and ambitions on the part of the white ruling class. And their drive to rule and dominate not only in this country but around the world. And so the contradictions of democracy and capitalism, and again, it's because this type of understanding that the Black Panther Party had become a target on the part of the FBI under the leadership of J. Edgar Hoover, who, by the way, had become a head of the FBI in the early part of the 20th century, and whose first job, one of whose earliest jobs, if not the first, was the takedown of Marcus Garvey. Removal of Marcus Garvey from the black life scene during the 20s and 30s, particularly in New York City. And his legacy shall live on, and the legacy of the FBI's strategies of what they refer to as neutralization shall also live on. And so with the Black Panther Party becoming public enemy number one, so to speak, J. Edgar Hoover's own words to the effect that the Black Panther Party had become the most dangerous threat to the national or internal security of this government. And due to its effectiveness, having gone beyond the classism, the unfortunate class structure, the internalized white classism, which had become in blackface. And this is a fact. But the Black Panther Party was able to appeal to the streets, to the lumpen. And this is something that Huey P. Newton, as a young man in his mid-20s, was able to realize phenomenal understanding for a young man to, at that age, to size up the situation and sort of like a game of chess. And what I'm saying is, due to his effectiveness, due to his philosophical genius, realizing that these class issues had to be crossed, these walls had to be in the black world, and had to be shattered, and that it would take the collective masses of us beyond the intellectuals, beyond what W.E.B. Du Bois referred to as the pallid intent, who had become the antagonist of Marcus Garvey. This, what we refer to as the petty bourgeoisie in blackface, let alone the Negro bourgeoisie, who would be parallel to what Malcolm X would refer to as the house nigger, as opposed to the field nigger. Huey P. Newton was a field nigger, and he had recognized the mechanizations of the house nigger, and so the effect of the Black Panther Party to appeal to the streets, in the cities, in the so-called urban environment, the urban community, which is where at some point the majority of people became concentrated, and due to the mass migrations out of the South, out of the rural areas, and expansion out into other parts of the country, into the cities. And this is during the around the World War One, World War Two eras, and after. And you're seeing this expansion into more urban environments. And so their appeal had become a problem to the state, because on the streets where you find what we see today is our warrior class, in the terminology that we use here, our soldiers, who were they to become politicized and trained in a military fashion, would virtually spell the end of this system as we know it. And if this is something that I don't have to make up. It's actually something that was concluded on the part of this specialist who the state turns to or looks to whenever they're trying to figure out the gangs or understand gang culture, gang movements, or what have you. Dr. George Knox, who had wrote a paper called Gang, Guerrilla Warfare, and Social Conflict. And his conclusion was basically that the streets, the gangs were pretty much a politicized army, not trained in the fashion of the United States military, and that was the only difference, that the United States military and the so-called gangs virtually shared the same type of mindset. And that is one bent on violence, and that the U.S. Army had perfected this violence under the guise of science, so therefore scientific violence. And so were these gangs, and this is what Knox is talking about specifically about the gangs, using the gangs as a sort of an epitome. And this is what the Black Panther Party had recognized. And so this is what also, this is pretty much the reason why the counterintelligence program went into operation, and which therefore led to the targeting of the Black Panther Party more than any of the other organizations that had been in the throes of freedom, or trying to lead the people to freedom. And so therefore, these certain types of strategies, tactics to go after certain members of Black Panther Party because of their ability to galvanize people. In some instances, political murder. And the one that would come to mind, of course, by those of us who have considered ourselves Panther Cubs, will come following in the footsteps of the Black Panther Party ideologically. We would understand that the one that comes to the assassination of Fred Hampton, Chairman Fred Hampton, the deputy chairman of the North Chapter of the Black Panther Party. But other than that, these political ramifications to target Black Panther Party leadership. One of the earliest cases would be Geronimo Pratt, who had become a member of the LA chapter of the Black Panther Party. And Geronimo Pratt was so formidable. This was one of the most feared of the Black Panther leadership. Geronimo Pratt had been a decorated war veteran, done a couple of tours in Vietnam, and this is the era in the 60s when, you know, the turmoil of the 60s, a number of things that had been taking place internally in this country, which had the potential to topple the state. The anti-Vietnam movement, the civil rights movement, the black liberation movement, and in the midst of that, other white radicals, militants, or revolutionaries, above ground and underground, such as the Weather Underground, who had conducted underground tactics, you know, underground warfare, and had been accused of bombings, so to speak, their political views opposed to the state, and pushed to the point of a certain type of practice. And so this is the point when the state was in a crisis. And so with the Black Panther Party being in the midst of the group that that could be seen as a catalyst in its overthrow. And so Geronimo Pratt, as I said, was a war veteran, a decorated war veteran, I believe that received a Purple Heart, a silver and bronze star. Now, this is, you know, if anybody who understands military science or language or have you, you know, the highest, you know, types of medals that a soldier could receive for his valor, you know, in war, you know. So Pratt had become a member of the L.A. chapter, and I believe Pratt was the Minister of Defense. And in their own words, you know, when you look into the kind of intelligence program COINTELPRO for short, which, by the way, documents had been liberated from a field office in, I think that was Boston or Philadelphia, one of those cities, by some white radicals. And it had become, of course, some suspicion that there was, you know, types of clandestine operations, and it had become, you know, fully exposed with the liberating of hundreds and hundreds of pages of FBI files, which is now known as COINTELPRO papers. As a matter of fact, there's a book that was published years ago. And the name of this book, I have a copy of his, The COINTELPRO Papers, by Ward Churchill, Ward, W-R-D, Churchill, Church with the last two letters, I-L-L on the end, and Jim Vanderwall. For anybody who's interested in reading this extraordinary book, which is basically composed of, you know, the COINTELPRO Papers, and this understanding, full understanding now of the FBI's treachery, of its goal, of its objective. And in their own words, when they're speaking about Geronimo Pratt, you know, to basically neutralize Pratt as an effective BPP functionary. And, you know, so Pratt was high on the list. And there was a murder that had taken place in 1968. A white woman named Carolyn Olson, who was shot to death on a tennis court. Yeah, go ahead, Conrad. We got, what you got?
Now, I just wanted to remind the listeners that if you want to chime in on the conversation or getting up on the call, be a participant, just press 1. Black Power, as you were, Chairman.
Yeah, right on. Yeah. And so, you know, this white woman was killed, and her husband, he survived. He was wounded. And so, in this police lineup, Geronimo Pratt was singing. Now, you know, it would have been impossible for Geronimo Pratt to have committed this murder when he had witnesses, of course, who could testify and prove that he was hundreds of miles away, somewhere over 300 miles away, I believe, 350 miles away when this murder taking place. You know, so we couldn't have possibly, it was mathematically impossible for an individual to be in two different spaces at the same time. And so here the state's trying to defy the laws of nature. But what had done it was the informant. And at this stage in the going into the 70s, the FBI, of course, by now had, you know, it had this program called GIP. And GIP is short for Ghetto Informant Program. In other words, they were hiring thousands and thousands of black people who would rather not take their hit and do their time. They'd rather sign up and join the ranks of the FBI under this informant program. And to my understanding, this informant program was very formidable. To the point where it was somewhere around 5,000 informants that they had accumulated a database of the FBI. And so one of these was Julius Butler. And it was this Julius Butler who had framed Geronimo Pratt, who had gave a testimony claiming that Pratt had told him, you know, yeah, I done it, yeah, I did that, and other blah, 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 you know. And that was the linchpin, to convict Geronimo Pratt in 1972. And so Pratt had, you know, spent a number of years being held what we understand as a prisoner of war. And Pratt was one of the first political prisoners during that time, one of the most notable political prisoners, because again of Pratt's abilities. It was during the shootout, the assault, the vicious wanton savage assault on the LA chapter, and that what Pratt had his training and his understanding. It's my understanding that it was because of Pratt's work that they were able to survive this vicious, savage assault by the pigs on the LA chapter. And right before that, there was the vicious assault on the Chicago headquarters in Chicago. Those of you who may have seen the, you know, the Judas and the Black Messiah movie, you know, they portray that in the movie, I mean, with precision, you know. And even in that case, you know, with Fred Hampton, before he was politically murdered, he was assassinated in 1969. Course, you know, the movie, of course, and we, you know, they're focusing on William O'Neill in the movie to get our people today to understand that in our struggle, we struggle. This is what the state will still do. This is what the state has done, you know. And so Pratt being, you know, one of the first victims of the Compton Touchdown Program, and of course, years later, Pratt had been released, and then he moved to Tanzania in central, I believe, the Central East Africa, Southern Africa, where he passed away in 2011. Among others, you had David Rice and Ed Poindexter, who were convicted on trumped up charges for the 1970 death of a Omaha pig, you know, in Omaha, Nebraska, Black Panther Party chapter. And let me say this here, you know the protocol of the Black Panther Party was about being active, you know, consistently active in the community. And that's some point that, to my understanding, that the Omaha chapter had been, you know, sort of put down or placed on due to inactivity. And so Rice and Poindexter had become leaders, members of the NCCF, which stands for the National Committee to Combat Fascism, which had also, you know, had other chapters, such as the chapter in New Orleans, you know, under the, you know, the Bad Brothers and Sisters of the Black Panther Party chapter here. And so it was at that point that Rice and Poindexter had been set up on a charge of this Omaha pig being killed in a explosion where a bomb had, some people like to say, went off. You know, the bomb went on, you know, and, you know, this pig had died in this explosion. It was a young teenager named Dwayne Peek who had given this testimony that, you know, Poindexter, you know, and Rice had, you know, they were the culprits, and that there was dynamite at Rice's house, and this bomb was made in Poindexter's house and all this type of stuff. This was a coerced confession, a complete manufactured story, you know. And as a result of that, David Rice and Ed Poindexter had become political prisoners due to their ideological views to combat fascism. This is the same terminology the Black Panther Party had used to refer to the state in its ways is a system of operation under fascism. And, you know, according to Benito Mussolini, who had always been getting that charge of being a fascist during the 30s, which led up to World War II in the 40s. And this, you know, this great war of liberation, you know, this great war to prevent the rise of fascism, spread of Nazism and whatnot, you know, Mussolini, the Italians, the Germans under Hitler's Nazi regime, and of course the Japanese under Hirohito, you know, the bombing of Japan, Nagasaki and Hiroshima by, you know, the American branch of the so-called Allied forces, which was England along with Russia. And and so, you know, this this understanding these workings, right? And so this is the due to the this you know, ideology, you know, seeing the state as fascist as they saw Mussolini as fascist. And so this is the evolution of the NCCF, of which Poindexter and Rice had become leaders. And so therefore they were targeted for neutralization, or to be neutralized. And so therefore they had pinned this killing of this Omaha pig due to this explosion. The going story was that Peek had been told to bring this suitcase to this location and to be on location at this payphone and, you know, receive a phone call and, you know, given further instruction. And so this call about him being told to put in a call, a 911 call about a woman being dragged into a house in the 2800 block of the street that escapes me right now. But it was a 2800 block of the street where this house was. And so naturally, you know, 911, whatever, 911, whatever you want to call it, you know, the pigs come, whatever. And this is what led to, you know, what they see as an ambush. And then some other things, of course, you know, we're going to, I had mentioned, you know, the weather underground, their philosophy. You know, we'll get back to try to tie in these ends and stuff. But you just want to, you know, kind of paint an intricate, like, portrait, you know, to get us to understand, you know, what we're up against, a vicious system, a very vicious a reactionary system, which when certain elements within society begin to think along their lines to equate themselves in thought, in thinking in terms of the system of wealth, the distribution of wealth, the racism, which leads to other factors that create these conditions, these contradictory conditions under the so-called democracy. And it was the Black Panther Party that, you know, understood this, you know, I'm trying to be careful about saying better than, you know, other groups, but understood it better than most groups. There were one or two other Black revolutionary, Black liberation-oriented movement organizations, such as the Republic of New Africa, and what's the other? It'll come to me. There was another group also, Revolutionary Action Movement, RAM, and they were more, you know, we can say underground. And then, of course, you know, the BLA, the Black Liberation Army, Underground Army, you know, and the all-out war made against the Black Liberation Army right here in this great democracy, or this country that had been projecting itself to the rest of the world as some great democracy, you know, while at the same time accusing other countries of having regimes, you know, as though this is no regime, but the country in Asia is a regime, or the country in Africa is a regime, or Russia as a regime, and China now, you know, is seen as a regime. And these are the terminologies, word plays play on the mind. And so that is what became of David Rice and Ed Poindexter. David Rice had passed in 2016, and which left Ed Poindexter still remain as political prisoner. We can also look at what's referred to as the angle of the three. Robert King Wilkerson, Herman Wallace, and Albert Woodfox in Angola Plantation, which is the largest, to my understanding, one of the largest prison plantations in this country. And of course, you know, the country of Angola in Africa. And so Angola is a large slavery plantation, which is still legal under the 13th Amendment. And so here you had Herman Wallace and Albert Woodfox. One was convicted, you know, of a previous so-called crime. Of murder, and the other one of robbery. So this is around 71, 72-71. With Wallace and Woodfox, a corrections officer was found dead, stabbed to death, and they had gotten charged with his murder. And it was because of their political views and their political understanding, being inside, steel and cement, one of the gulags of the state, his concentration camp, that we refer to, and it was because of that become politicized and understanding of Black Panther Party ideology, that they had, had grown in terms of, their understanding of the conditions as it relates to the state. Crime and politics is inseparable. That is a fact. And this system is criminal. As a matter of fact, the U.S. government, this country, whatever you want to call it, the jurisdiction is no more, no less than a corporation, the United States Corporation. And this is what, would lead us into what we know today as Wall Street. The corporations, the Fortune 500 clubs, who every day hustle the people, hustle the people's labor, receive, quarterly, banknotes for no actual labor put in whatsoever. These terms such as how much did you earn this quarter, when actually they haven't earned a goddamn thing, and so this is how this whole thing ties in together. And so it's because of that Woodfox and Wallace understanding, and they begin to politicize other fellow prisoners of war. And of course there were their objective also with the understanding of the capitalist system that, Black inmates, white inmates and what have you, were, victimized by a system, that placed it in a race, class, dichotomy. Yeah. And so, due to their understanding and recognizing, they began to politicize, fellow inmates, against, racism. Creating form of type of prison solidarity. The conditions, they had done hunger strikes, and even, protesting with the these spurts of rape. So this is the type of work they've been doing on the inside of Angola. And so they had formed a Angola chapter. The third member of the Angola 3 was Robert King Wilkerson, who had been charged with a separate murder, I believe, and had been transferred to Angola. And so it was due to Robert King Wilkerson's beginning to understand even understanding the law. And so therefore, King Wilkerson had become in solidarity with Woodfox and Wallace, and it was because of that King was charged with this murder, which would have made it impossible because at the time the murder King hadn't even been transported to Angola yet. And so it was due to their political ideology, due to their political views, not because they stole so much as a pack of now leaders, that they were charged with this murder, because of the political views starting the Angola Black Panther chapter. Now, there's another elder who I've gotten to know somewhat, and sharing these inside stories, the things, some of these things, they don't make the the history books, or he had kind of, well, not kind of, but he'd given me a painted this this picture, you know, this it given the rundown on how actually, you know, that Angle the chap that started, and that he had been part of that as a Black Panther Party member. He had been captured as a modern day Robin Hood, and his courageousness, his fortitude, his bravery, his love for his people in an undying love for his people, the struggle, willing to expropriate to support the movement, the revolutionary movement, and so this is how he had become a prisoner of war. You know, and so while inside, he had, given instruction and an instrument in putting together and placing, you know, these brothers in these particular positions, you know, a minister of defense and whatnot and so forth, you know. Now known to us as, we refer to him as Baba Farouk. You know, he had converted to Islam. When he was being held captive. And so this is out of Angola the Angola Black Panther Party chapter had been formed. And due to, like I said, their political understanding, affiliation, being opposed to the state, opposed to capitalist system, the racism, that they had become targets, and so therefore set up on these trumped-up charges of murdering their prison incorrections officer. And it was Wallace and Woodfox who had served as the longest political prisoners in solitary confinement. You know, Tony Driver did a lockdown. And of course, over the recent years, the last of the Angles that had been released, Herman Wallace, King Wilkerson had been released, I think, around 2001, somewhere up in there. But, you know, he never gave up on his comrades. And so, you know, these are clear human rights violations, cruel and unusual punishment, you know, that the state professes to uphold in cahoots with these other nations referred to as the United Nations and these so-called Geneva Accords, these international accords, these international laws that were established and all, you know, the participating countries were duty-bound to uphold. And in these international laws where it speaks about cruel and unusual punishment, America has been the most guilty in any other country. You know, as I said earlier, using media hype to label other groups, other nations as regimes and, having political prisoners. And so, there's specific, examples of, reality of becoming political prisoners in this country, which this country fails to recognize. Of course, there's many others. When we spoke about the underground movement, the Black Liberation Army, and whatnot, it was political prisoner kind of mine, Mutula Shakur, who has been convicted on the Brinks armed robbery, where two guards had been murdered and killed, and he had been seen as the mastermind behind the whole thing, yet. They have no real physical evidence of anything. And, he had finally been captured, I believe, in 81, somewhere around there, beginning of the 80s, and had become a political prisoner. And due to his fortitude, even inside as a political prisoner, had begun to politicize the younger brothers behind the wall. And so... this is the Mutula Shakur that, some brothers on the streets may have gotten more familiar with due to the fact that his last name is the same last name as Tupac Shakur, whose mother, Athena Shakur, had also become a political prisoner of the New York 21, who had been accused of, blowing up or plotting or scheming or, to blow up federal buildings, and then become part of the New York 21. And Athena had actually won her case on her own, pretty much. She had written, political papers behind the wall. And if anybody's interested, a book, can't think of the name of it. Black Panther Speak. And inside is this compilation of, political prisoners' writings and whatnot, positions of the Black Panther Party. And inside that, you can read, finish your course, political paper, which I would strongly recommend for anybody who wants to really understand. And we know that, the thing about, many may come or whatever, fewer called or whatnot. This sort of equation, but New York 21, of course, in the Matula Shakur, become political prisoner. Also one of the most internationalized cases with Mumia Abu-Jamal, who had become a member of Black Panther Party in the Philadelphia chapter, and had also been framed for a murder of a police officer on the streets of Philadelphia. And there's so many discrepancies, of course, in this case. It's ridiculous. You know what I'm saying? And who's still, as a matter of fact, a political prisoner we speak today, who has written several books, who have been able to do even a broadcast. Incredible. You had Russell Maroon Schultz, Jaleel Moundir King. These brothers would merge in the Black Liberation Army, the underground apparatus of the Black Liberation Movement. And of course, in more recent times, of course, some of these elders have been, granted their release. This is the thing, it's sort of like this pattern, so to speak. But with Herman Wallace, he become sick and dying, so the state, a clever strategic move, a tactic, so they had this on their track record, but see him as have long to live, and so to make themselves look like that, a demise, or to not have themselves in the same arena with other countries that choose a political prisoner will die in prison. And of course, this is what became of David Wright, but with Herman Wallace, they granted him, his parole. You had Eddie Conway, the Baltimore chapter, political prisoner, recently. And more recently has also been released. Jaleel Moundir King, who I've just mentioned, has been released. Sekou Odinga, who had been charged with the murder of a New Jersey pig on the New Jersey Turnpike incident that took place in 1973, along with Asad Shakur and Zay Shakur. Zay Shakur had become fatally wounded, and Asad Shakur had survived her wounds. And so here, 81, 82, somewhere up in there in the early 80s, Asad Shakur had been liberated by a team that liberated her and whisked her away to Cuba, where she still remains today. Due to attempted murder, of these two had been traveling in the wee hours of the night on the New Jersey Turnpike. These, a number of, high-profile cases. And, of course, like I say, with Mumia Abu-Jamal, who also become sick. Even in these recent times, relatively recent times, after 9-11, after the CIA orchestrated 9-11 hit, in order to make war on Iraq, for the control of natural resources of Iraq, and particularly the oil, based on this paper that's written, PNAC paper, the Project of the New American Century, which had stated purpose and goal, this list, the hit list that the state had, trying to, confiscate what they had carved out as the Middle East. These countries are Iran, Iraq, Syria, these countries that we see now in total chaos. And so as a result of that, well, with the 9/11, the institutionalization of the Homeland Security Act, Patriot Act, this would give the legitimization, the excuse to go after dissidents. And this is something that they never forgot, because they could never get H.R.A.P. Brown. And attempts on his life a time or two before, but they could never nab him. And so after all this time, 9/11, the program was still in effect, even though the sham court hearing that they always put on the big screen, you know, these things that we've seen more recent times, these congressional hearings and whatnot, you know, this sham congressional hearing where they, you know, pretended to, you know, condemning the FBI and who and the counterterrorism program and all the stuff about the constitutional rights of American citizens and so forth, and somebody that officially was closed down as bullshit, because they never let up, they've never given up on trying to snare H.R.A.P. Brown, who's known as his president, Imam Jamil Amin. And so after that 9/11, and he wasn't the only one that they were talking. There was several other Panther OGs who they were talking, kicking in doors. But this is a murder attempt, a political attempt on the part of the Georgia State Police, the Atlanta Pigs, you know, where these two pigs had been shot. Well, one of them fatally had been shot. And so the other one had survived. And so in his description, he had given a total description of the match of H.R.A.P. Brown, given total different color, the assailant's eyes and everything. He said he had knew that he had, he said he knew for a fact that he had wounded his assailant. And so when they kidnapped H.R.A.P. Brown, the so-called manhunt, they found no wounds whatsoever on him at all. You see, and so the media put the story out of the manhunt for H.R.A.P. Brown. No, he tried to murder him. So, you know, having been experienced, you know, counterintelligence program, he knew exactly what was taking place. And this is why, he naturally, fled for his life. But he didn't flee for his life empty-handed. He had also kept a bulletproof vest, you know, and so to protect himself. But the media put it out, this great manhunt for this cop killer. You see, and so today, Imam Jamil is being held as a political prisoner. And he becomes sick, too. And so in his process, he also embraced Islam, you know. And this is an attempt to so-called free Imam Jamil. Imam Jamil would confess, or, and Imam Jamil sort of on principle. He'd rather stay, in prison than confess to something he didn't do and be let go free and be out in the free society. You see what I'm saying? So the fortitude, the determination of true revolutionaries in a war, in a war against the political machine, which seeks to destroy those who, in essence, want the same thing that George Washington wanted of his people. In the meantime, George Washington was also himself a hypocrite, because he had owned the answers of the people from which the calibers of H.R.A.P. Browns and Mumia Abu-Jamal's and Tudor Shakur's had been birthed from. You know what I'm saying? And so, H.R.A.P. Brown, in a sense, is the link to today's political prisoners, who we have today. And this is something that would be unbelievable, due to the day and time, all the technology, there's no more segregation, black people, just as much as an equal chance, to make it, and whites. This ain't slavery anymore. This ain't, Jim Crow anymore. The Ku Klux Klan. They ain't around like talking about it. Black people can sit on the front of the bus now. Black women can go and have their babies in these
new high-tech hospitals like white women, whereas opposed before they couldn't, have, babies in these hospitals because of segregation. You know, little black boys and little black girls can drink off the same water fountains now today, and they can sit next to each other in the classroom, enjoy sports and entertainment. You know, we all one in this multiculturalism. You know, so it would be incredibly hard to believe that today we have political prisoners. We want to, of course, mention, some of these brothers, if not all of them, but, we've had in the Black Power movement today, which is the child of the Black Liberation Movement, which came about in the 60s. Due to the influence of Robert Williams and the great Malcolm X, who had began to embrace the black nationalist philosophy, self-defense. Robert Williams, who had himself had been a military vet, and so he had formed, gun clubs, teaching the sisters how to, how to shoot, how to protect themselves, in the 50s, in the 60s, in Carolina, And so it's because of Robert Williams, Malcolm X, and, of course, before them, Marcus Garvey, that the Black Panther Party had melded together. And so the extension of the Black Panther Party to today in the Black Power movement, the slogan Black Power, which was, brought about, coined by one Willie Ricks, who had been with Stokely Carmichael in Lowndes County, along with Martin Luther King, and their ability to transcend difference in ideology for an immediate cause. You see, and so, the chant, the yell of Black Power, which is still alive. And so in the days Black Power movement, the different, factions or groups, and I'm not afraid to say factions, because no struggle is perfect. There's internal things that take place and whatnot with any movement historically. But at the same time, the solidarity that's been shown, the New Black Panther Party, the now two New Black Panther Party due to a split in the party, and other offsprings of Black Panther groups, around the country, and in more recent times, we've had a whiff of what was referred to as "In Fact and Not Fucking Around" coalition. If that's what it actually stands for, but I say that on account of a young brother named Ozone, Thor Wallace, who had been convicted of murdering a police officer, and he had been a member of NFAC, and had left NFAC had been in the process or the early stages of joining one of the groups of the New Black Panther Party. And some of us may have seen this body cam what allegedly took place. And he was later captured, I believe, in Georgia, I believe, and sentenced, he's being held captive now. And what we understand is a political prisoner, prisoner of war, and as we speak today, he has an attorney that has been mad support for this young brother, financially, you know, his upcoming trial to have a legal counsel, to my understanding, has a incredible track record of defending the wrongly accused. And so this is one brother, you know, who had become the victim of, you know, the descendant, so to speak, or the, you know, the current state of the counterintelligence program. And, of course, there's, you know, other ramifications that go along with, you know, his case. And, you know, but we want to at least give you sort of a general description of who this young brother is. We've also have a young brother in New York on a who had been a member of the New Black Panther Party before the New Black Panther Party, I believe that come to a split in the New Black Panther Party, and had been convicted of a murder in New York. Been now held captive for going on 9 years. Who was formerly at one point was at Dannemora in correctional facility, and who's now, I believe, in Sing Sing, being held captive, and it's due to his the situation. There's no forensic evidence whatsoever. There's no weapon whatsoever. There isn't anything that could pin that murder on him. The state still has his actual belongings, and the state attorney, I believe, has refused to release his personal belongings after all these years. You know, of course, you know, you file a motion of discovery. And, you know, then that he's had his the trial and everything. So now those belongings are still his. And to my understanding, is yet to be turned over. And, of course, we understand and know that this has a very, very profound effect on his case, on his trial. And so there's nothing to pin this murder on him except the fact that the same pig that had kidnapped him, the same pigs who obviously had known, had become to understand and even know his name, so to speak. And it was due to his political involvement in the New Black Panther Party. There had been several incidents that had taken place, and here you had this young brother, you know, barely old enough to legally buy alcohol, you know, right in the thick of things, you know, organizing the people, the protests. You know, there's a picture that someone had actually taken of this young brother. You know, it'd be like that sometimes when you come, you know, face to face, you know, with the pig. The pig is the first line of defense, you know. But it was due to his political involvement in a revolutionary organization, a revolutionary formation, which has the date now due to 9/11 and the new, more sophisticated version of fascism under the Homeland Security Act, Patriot Act 1, 2, and 3, so forth, and how the FBI has you know, how should I say it? I don't want to say revamped itself, but become more innovative. And so now this actually a term that we use, black identity extremists, this domestic terrorist group watch list, which the New Black Panther Party has been placed on, and some of us have traveling restrictions on, or these traveling ramifications that we have to be put through protocol by the so-called TSA at the airport, you know, during you know, times when traveling is involved. And so it is due to, you know, this young brother's political, ideological views as a young black nationalist revolutionary, the call for black power, whose chosen name is Hannibal. Some people pronounce it Rushdie, some of us pronounce it Rushdie, but whose government name, slave name is Justin Saul Cody. you know, so it's, again, you know, we see, you know, as a modern version, you know, the latest victims of the counterintelligence program in a much more sophisticated ways. Of course, there's been other, there's been leaked documents which says, similar to the directives that were handed out by J. Edgar Hoover, and as a matter of fact, document the FBI quote that all avenues or channels of operation or everything under the sun is to be used to turn up, ramp up this infiltration, what have you, whatever you need to do to, in their own words, to, you know, in their own way, to neutralize the such groups as the New Black Panther Party or the other formations of groups that have taken on the Black Panther name or the Black Panther logo. You know, there's a other brother, you know, named Shango, who we also believe is a political prisoner, you know, being held captive due to his evolution, you know, from the you know, the dark into the light, so to speak. Developing the rebellious, militant attitude towards, you know, the state, you know, revolutionary ways of thinking, you know, and it's a number of things. There's also two other brothers who were former political prisoners. Brother King Submit, who was also a former member of the New Black Panther Party in the chapter, the Philadelphia chapter. Another brother, Sharif, another brother in, it was still currently in the New Black Panther Party, National Field Marshal, the New Black Panther Party, who at one point in time was a political prisoner on a trumped up gun charge, having, you know, been a felon due to a previous crime that he had committed and had done, you know, some time for stealing a car, and in the process he had, you know, had a terrible accident. I believe it was a mother and a child was in the car or something. I believe the mother had died or something in this crash. But the brother had, you know, done his time and had transformed not only his mind, also transformed the way he eat. You know, had become disciplined even in that form and that fashion. And, you know, so due to his political understanding, his militancy in the New Black Panther Party, his fearlessness in the New Black Panther Party, had been set up on a gun charge, you know, being in possession of a firearm as a felon, and had done several years until the judge had come to his senses and had thrown out this trumped up charge against our brother Sharif Amenhotep, National Field Marshal of the New Black, of one of the groups of the New Black Panther Party, which initially had been started by David Foreman. Other brother, I forget the names, you know, slips my mind at this point. But, you know, back in the late 80s, Aaron Michaels, I believe, is his name. But, yeah, and so this is the, you know, the whole, you know, situation of where we're at today, you know, from political prisoners past to the present. And, again, we're in a liberation struggle. And this is going to be a reality. You know, there are those of us who want to play it safe and seek, you know, civil redresses. But the state doesn't really recognize civility because it has never been civil, you see. It is a vicious machine. Even when the adaptation of it had come about under Pig Washington, who had the nerve, the audacity to accuse the King of England as being a tyrant, and therefore they had wrote up their Declaration of Independence, and had in this Declaration of Independence that it is the right of the people to demolish a system once it becomes or verges upon despotism and loses all sanity when it comes to governing the people who have allowed those to be placed in these positions to govern. And it has been that case from day one with black people. And so they could our human right to exist trumps all civil rights. You know, it's our human right to exist. And we are in the same situation that the people in Vietnam had found themselves, that the people in China, in Russia, in countries in South America, even in Africa, you know, Cape Verde, Guinea-Bissau, West Africa, under the leadership of Amilcar Cabral, you know, this is where we find ourselves in what is now known as Zimbabwe under the leadership of Robert Mugabe, you know, and his right-hand man in the liberation struggle to come out from under the rule of the British and the French and the Portuguese, the Algerian liberation struggle in northern Africa, come out from under the rule of the French imperialists, you know, and so even in Cuba, we're in the same position as the people in Cuba had found themselves. And there are those who in our midst will try to convince us otherwise. But there's 40 million of us here. And so there could be no one small group that can live the life of Riley while the rest of us are still continually catching hell. The system is rotten to the core. As a matter of fact, it's eating at its own legs. And so we, you know, we just wanted to be able to make this clip. And so, you know, stay tuned. Next week. We ain't got but a few ticks left, but, you know, stay tuned next week, 7 p.m. Central, 8 p.m. Eastern Time, in Defense of the People Radio. Your host, Chairman Nat Turner, Coles, Brother Motherland, and our assault technician on the ones, two, Sister Iman O'Shun, as our National Minister of Communication, Black Power.
The river I've been running ever since. It's been a long time coming, but I know change gon' come. Oh, yes it will. It's been too
he winds up knocking me. I've got to earn my need. And there's been times that I thought I couldn't last for long. Now I think I'm able to carry on. It's been a long, long time coming, but I know change gonna come. Oh, yes, it will.